I'm gonna start it.
Well, I'm 20 seconds slow. All right. I'm gonna call the May meeting of the Planning Board to order. I wanna remind everybody, this is not a public hearing, so we will not be taking comments from the public at this time. You will get your shot. But tonight's not the night. We have three applications we'll go over tonight. One is from Columbia Green Habitat for a lot line adjustment and a residential high density. One is for a home business in a Hamlet One. And one is the Mill District project that Brandy will be telling us about. Let's start with Habitat for Humanity.
Hello.
We've made an application to do a final lot line adjustment on the project on Eagle Street to adjust the lot to be equal for both property owners. The original plan, when we were supposed to duplex, we did not change the initial boundary of the lot. We now have substantially completed the house, and we're just looking to straighten out the middle of the lot. Conforms with all of the zoning requirements, and we're nearly complete now.
So what I see is the proposed new line actually borders the Ingles. Is that correct?
No, it's the line between the two houses.
It's this. Parcel A1 and A2.
The proposed subdivision line, is that it?
Yes.
Okay. Just confusing because at the bottom it says proposed new line for lot line adjustment.
Well, that was from the old survey.
Okay. All right, so basically all you're doing is straightening out the line so the properties are equal?
Yes.
Anybody got any questions?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
What does equal mean?
That the lots are substantially as equal as we can make them given the contours of the existing property. So we're trying to equalize within the boundaries, the middle line between the two homes.
So the square footage is equal or close? Or?
It's close.
Anything else?
I don't see anything.
Now, do we need a public hearing for this also? All right, so what I need now is a motion to accept the application.
I'll make a motion.
Need a second?
I'll second it.
I have a motion and a second to accept the application. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, pass. We'll set you up for a public hearing in June. And I'll tell you the date as soon as I can get to my calendar.
Okay. 18th.
When is it?
18th.
All right.
She's on the ball.
Thank you.
All right, the next one. From Sally Rappaport. It's in Hamlet 1. Summit Street Extension, which runs up past the mill. And you used to be a hairdresser there, correct, Frank Harvey?
Yes. That's my
All right.
Understanding.
Yep.
So tell us what you want to do.
I didn't realize I was supposed to have a special permit. I've been seeing a few patients a week there live. I do a lot online also, teaching and telemedicine for herb consults. You know, maybe 10 patients a week max, usually 10 to 15 at the most, but it's usually closer to 10 or fewer live patients. It's about, I try to group them together, so it's about one per hour. There's a turnaround there for parking. I have a sign-in next to my door. It's in the under part of the house where there's a separate entrance. Nothing will really change. I just wanted to
be legal.
Cross my T's and dot my I's and be legal, yeah.
All right, and your hours are what, 8 to 6?
Yeah.
Monday to Friday?
Yeah.
No real problem with exterior lighting or anything like that?
Nope.
All right, so you're looking for a special permit.
Yeah.
Any questions from the board?
Is the turnaround on the right-of-way, or is completely on your property?
No, the turnaround, my understanding is that it was authorized by Mr. Noble years ago, and it's on his property, but it's authorized for the use by the two tenants, 7 Summit Extended and 8 Summit Extended.
So it's by a right-of-way, or not sure what the legal language is?
I don't know what the legal language is.
You have in writing, all right?
Excuse me?
Gentleman's agreement, or?
I think my neighbors may know better. Is it a legal agreement, or it's an understanding that goes way behind when I have owned the property? It's been that way for a very long time.
Well, probably Frank Harvey had the same kind of agreement.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
That's a lie.
Oh.
That's a lie.
Oh.
We're both sitting right here. He owns the building.
I just
turned
that's around and
total
asked.
Total horseshit.
Okay. So
that's his loan that they paid. The town did it.
You'll get it. You'll get your chance to bring this up.
Fine.
But tonight is not the night.
Okay. Well, that was my understanding. So.
Sally, no, you're addressing us.
Okay.
But now that you know there's a concern, you might want to research it and see if there is a legal right to use it.
Okay.
If you don't know, maybe you consult whoever you used for your closing. They would probably have your title.
Okay.
And your title would probably say if you had a deeded right of way or if there was an easement or anything in it.
Okay.
Or if there's a different workaround even.
Right.
Okay.
All right. All right, I need a motion to accept the application for a special permit from Sally Rappaport.
I'll make a motion.
Second?
I'll second it now.
I have a motion and second to accept the application. All in favor?
Aye.
I mean, they were all ayes, right?
Yes.
All ayes? Okay. All right, so the motion to accept is passed. Sal, you will also be here 15? 18. So June 18, and get that issue resolved because we're going to need that.
Okay, no problem.
All right, thank you. All right, Brandy, you're on.
Thanks, Mr. McFarland. So I'm Brandy Nelson. I'm a civil engineer with Tye and Bond, and we are here with 27 Summit Street, LLC, and I will let the owners go ahead and do a presentation to share with the board and those folks who are here. And then if there are additional technical questions, I can answer those. And then I wanted to talk with the board about our application and the seeker, getting started with the seeker process on this project.
All right, and tell us who you are again.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Slide.
Can we maybe turn it slightly so we can see it?
A whole lot.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Kind of stuck between the
turn.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, so thank you. So I'm Alex Friedman, Alex Hammerschlag, Antonia. So we're with the Summit Mill. And the purpose of the meeting tonight, as far as we understand it, is one, to initiate the seeker process following this meeting, make sure you guys are comfortable starting that process. And second is to see what other items we need to confirm that we have a complete application. So in the beginning, we're just going to start by kind of going through some of the details of the project. Some of you from 2 months ago might have seen this. There's a few updates, but just for those of you who don't remember or weren't here, want to give a couple of updates about that, and then we'll go to the real issues that we're trying to get at tonight. So both of us have been lifelong friends, grew up together, our families grew up together. In the past few years, we've been working in Hudson, so we had two abandoned, condemned buildings in Hudson that we used historical tax credits to renovate. As most of you know, bought the mill just under 2 years ago. One of the things about the mill that you know we talked about last time, but just wanted to highlight again, is is just thinking about the history of the mill in terms of the village of Philmont. So, as most of you know, the mill was there from the late 1800s. The town kind of built around it, all the housing and everything in that area, and it was once a real central focus of the village of Philmont. And we love the idea, and our goal is to bring that back and make it another kind of epicenter and hopefully creative resource for the village once again. We've done some economic studies. The understanding as of now is estimated about 22 jobs would be generated by this project. That's direct jobs. There's also, you know, multiplier effect of jobs, but direct. And that's a substantial increase in the number of jobs in Philmont. So, in general, people will ask, you know, are those good paying jobs? And the estimated salaries for those jobs is about $900,000. For those 22 jobs based on the studies that we've done. So obviously it has some real benefits in terms of making that a resource for the town, for the village again, as well as the economics and job creation opportunities of the mill. As all of you are aware, it's an attractive nuisance and has been for many years. We've done what we can, tried to, at least in the first couple years of ownership, to put some cameras up, to board up some windows, to reduce the attractive nuisance, but we understand from what we've seen, and all of our neighbors tell us regularly that it continues to be an issue. Our hope is once we're able to get construction moving and build and rebuild the mill, hopefully that will go away and it'll be just a more beautiful place that people can enjoy and not have these attractive nuisances on a regular basis.
We wanted to also just rehash a few kind of key items about the process itself. One of the most important things from the development side is that we will have to receive a certain amount of money in grant and incentive programs. It is paramount to us being able to do the project, and we appreciate all the help people have provided to date. The notable program is what we'll always refer to as SHPO, which is a historic tax credit program. This we cannot do the project without achieving this incentive. The one thing we wanted to really reiterate is this is a really bureaucratic process. It has to go through both state and federal review. So a lot of the decisions that we've made and some of that we'll highlight today are directly in response to the requirements of this process that really is meeting a good amount of direction, especially on the exterior. One of the other nice things that we're applying for is a net zero program. We know what we're doing with solar. We're going to have solar panels on the building. That's going to account for a certain amount of our usage. We will be starting to explore more formally the idea around micro hydro with the village planning board, and we will certainly keep everyone apprised at our progress, because it's obviously a very exciting part of the process, and we look forward to updating everyone as we get to know more ourselves. Along with the challenges that come with applying through SHPO, a lot of what we're going to talk to you today is just reiterating this was an industrial building that was built in an industrial area. and in an industrial context, and it is now an industrial building surrounded by all residential properties, so the context has changed drastically. It has led to some of the points we'll be making and asking about later in the presentation. Most notably, obviously, we're surrounded by water in a few sides, and we do have an easement and a road that provides access to our neighbors through and along our property line.
In terms of programming, and again, this is a repeat from last time, but just to go through it, the goal is to have a restaurant bar on one side of the building, and this is, here you can see, there's kind of some seating downstairs, seating above. There's some stills there, probably won't be a brewery, but just for rendering purposes. So this would be one side of the first floor. Other side of the first floor is geared towards an event space. So, you know, the events, we've been really excited just even talking to people in the village about potential events that even people are interested in having, theater, music, weddings, parties, whatever it is. But there's two potential event spaces in the building, one here, which is a double height area, and the second on the third floor. Other thing, just in terms of that piece, is also the grants. So the goal is to get some arts grants and have sculptures and different types of arts programming throughout the building, and looking to get people in the area to help contribute for some of the creative ideas within the building.
Everyone asks us about parking, so we wanted to start to touch on it a little bit today. The building is being designed for a maximum occupancy of 460 people. That really is related to fire code and egress. We hopefully will have an event or two a year that has that many people, but that would be a handful of times. We know we will solve 90% of our parking or a lot of our parking off-site, and we know that part of the solution to the parking will need the municipal lot as part of that solution. We know there's a lot of talk and a lot of great ideas around what's happening with that particular lot. Currently, though, as we understand it, there's an assumed amount of around 80 spots of parking there. So we will obviously need some more time to solve this problem. We plan on solving it, and we will also update everyone here as we know more and figure it out. One clarification we did just want to highlight: in the application, we did have this piece of road that does go over one of our neighbor's property lines. We just wanted to highlight that now and just note that in the next slide, we have resolved that, so we're not asking for any access agreement or easements over anyone's property line. We're trying to solve all of our design and access solutions within our own property line. And we'll get to some of the other challenges of this down the road. One thing to note that was in the old application, or the old version of the application, is the we're starting to show site lighting, which are just bollards about every 20 feet. And we don't have any code requirements, from our understanding, for egress along this lighting path, so our intent is to be very, very minimum, most likely below the 1 foot candle code requirement. It's just to create an ambiance and a little bit of a glow in the landscape. And if actually you go back up to the parking before we go, this rendering is just somewhat of conceptually what we're thinking about for lighting around the space. Nothing more than that, and it'll only be during operating hours, obviously. This is just showing exterior lighting. The catwalk or porch on the back will be for egress as well, so we will need lighting along the walkway during operating hours as well. We're not here to talk about any more details of the plans. We are going to continue to put our design updates in these presentations so that when we post them, everyone can see the great work the design team is doing. But the program hasn't changed. We've already talked about the occupancy. But always happy to hear from the village as we get further down the process. So, to the meat of the conversation, we're thinking about calling this requested waivers. But I actually think when we get to it, there's three topics, and we're not even sure if we're asking for waivers or we're just asking for clarification. I'll get into a little bit of our confusion shortly. So the first one is landscape buffers. So it is our understanding from the highlighted section of the code here that the board already has discretion on approving site plan and landscape features without requesting a waiver. The reason I think this is important is we are showing everything we feel we can do and is appropriate to do given the type of building and given the SHPO process. So if you go to the next slide, first and foremost, we have water and road on two sides of our property. So obviously we can't do screening when the property, when the building abuts the property line or it's abuts a creek. Secondarily, we are showing fence and screening in the areas where our property actually does abut a neighbor's property. Everywhere else, we are kind of in an odd situation to be divided between our property line, the road that it goes through a property that provides access to the neighbors, and the primary facade of the building, which we're putting as many trees as we think we even have a chance at getting approved through the SHPO process. The state and federal reviews really want the building to feel historic in its context. So if there were no trees in front of a mill building back in the 1870s, they don't like having trees in front of the building now. So we are trying to do screening wherever we feel where it's appropriate. So the second one has really two buckets. One is a little more straightforward, which is operating hours. We're trying to be a restaurant and an event space. And currently, as we understand it, the code has operating hours of 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. during the weekdays and to 10 p.m. on Fridays and Saturdays. We are asking that we operate until at least 10 p.m. or till 11 p.m. on the weekdays and midnight on the weekends. Obviously, we can all imagine that operating a restaurant that closes at 8 is kind of a recipe for failure. And we are going to be having, hopefully, performances and concerts on the weekends for the village to enjoy as well. And early shutoff dates will make that all pretty hard to manage. So we are asking for what we think is pretty industry standard operating hours for a product like this, or a building like this. The more nuanced conversation about the noise is the decibel levels. So we have a concern, and we want to just open up how to address this, that the ambient noise of the waterfall can exceed the current decibel levels, especially at the lower end of the code. So what we want to make sure is that we're all aligned on how to analyze our impact on the environment, but also make sure that someone can't just hold a meter on the waterfall or close to the waterfall that's on our property line and say, you're in violation. One of the ways we were thinking about it was, because our building abuts our property line at certain places or is very close to the property line, but it is 30, 40, 50, 60 feet away from the nearest building, we also are hoping to get a increased decibel level at certain operating hours as well. The last waiver is a little more straightforward. There's an existing loading dock door and structure that is a foot out of the existing code. We're hoping to have a waiver to bring it from, I think, 15 feet wide to, for 15 feet high to 14 feet high. Because we just don't want to touch the doors. That's it. Thank you.
All right, so on the loading dock, you're a foot short, is that correct, in height?
Yes.
And from a noise standpoint, I mean, I worry about setting a precedent by, you know, allowing a waiver for one property and maybe get another property. We have one right next door to where I live that, but in my estimation, that would be up to the abutters. I mean, if the abutters don't really have a problem with it.
I think the question it's twofold. The waiver is one thing, but it's also setting realistic guidelines for the kind of, what's the word, implementation of the code. So right now, if you go out, and we spot check this, I'm not an acoustical engineer, but you take a calibrated decibel reader and you hold it near a property line after a big rain event at the waterfall, it can be over 50 decibels. So I just want to make sure that we're not being held accountable for the ambient noise that's already in excess. Am I saying this right? That's already in excess, or potentially in excess, of the current code. If the waiver is one step too far, we do just want to make sure that kind of the rules of the code are set properly.
No, I understand.
Okay.
I mean, I wouldn't want to get a ticket for the waterfall either.
Exactly.
All right, and as far as the buffer, I don't know about the rest of the board, but I don't see a problem with the buffer.
You're talking about the screening?
The screening?
Yeah, the screening.
Yeah, I would agree that they have you have discretion in the screening and where it doesn't necessarily work for your boundary lines and things. You're not going to screen the water. You know,
yes.
Protect the water from unsightly things. So the screening is really meant to protect the neighbors of the neighborhood. So your rationale there, I agree that they have discretion in the code for that. The loading dock gets 1 foot. It's not a huge thing. If it's going to penalize you more than anybody else, I would think they have discretion on that too. The parking, that could be huge if you have 460 people and you have less than half the parking required. But we'll take it that you said you're going to work on it, and we'll see what you come up with.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, the planning board's ultimate thing they could do is limit how many people or space you could use.
That's why we phrase that we're designing for 460 people. We hope we solve all the parking, but we understand that that's the only way we can phrase it currently.
And I know the village board is more than happy to give you the use of the municipal lot, you know, as long as it's not in competition with any of the other uses that are wanting to use that. And then the only other thing is the noise. That appears in two places in the code. It's actually in Chapter 100 for everywhere in the village, and then it's in our zoning code as well. And I get the ambient noise is over 50 decibels. I mean, maybe you just need to look at it from showing them that the ambient noise on a rainy day is already over that, and then pick sensitive receptors from, I mean, your building's going to block some things. I mean, maybe that's more of a Brandy thing. If she could show when you're having an event and you're doing it into your courtyard that the neighbors, they're the sensitive receptor, and they're not going to be bothered because it's going to be, you know, on a rainy day, you hit 55 anyway, and when you're having an event, you're going to do an acoustic music or something, it's not going to exceed that, then you can show the planning board you're there. Because I don't really see that they have a power of a waiver over that. I don't know how we're going to tackle that.
Is that something that we could seek a specific modification to zoning for the Milk District from the village board?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Because, you know, yeah, it doesn't work. It doesn't work for this project with the
just
zoning.
Just the geometry and the setbacks and everything, yeah. To have the point of compliance be the property line when the building is on the property line makes it impossible to even have any means of attenuating aside from the thickness of the building walls.
But I think even to make that pitch to the village board, you still kind of have to do what we were just talking about.
A little more
what I was
data analysis.
About. Because
yeah.
The neighbors will be concerned. You're going to have heavy metal concerts in the backyard, and they live 100 feet away, and they're going to be upset. So
we've done some gut checks on this too. So yeah, we just want to understand what we need to. We do not want to disturb any of the neighbors, and we feel comfortable that we can do most of what we want to do without disturbing them. We just want to make sure that how we can prove that is pretty clear. And then obviously there's just the operating hours though, which is
yeah, and they've altered those before too. Again, based upon location, access, those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know. You're near residences, but you're not smack dab in the middle of a residential neighborhood where that would be necessarily a problem or an issue. So,
and we would think actually the off-site parking probably helps that because we're not having 60 cars in front of a house.
I mean, that's my 30,000 feet on it, just to hit the issues that they brought up.
Well, I agree with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would like to hit those issues also from a somewhat different perspective. the concentration here in your presentation and in this form is to get into the details of the waivers, for instance, the 1 foot difference and the height of the loading dock doors. But there's very little in here that addresses the three elephants in the room. Usually we have one, but here we have three. Mm-hmm. So the first elephant is parking. So this building, I would say in the history of this building, it's never had 460 people in it. The bulk of the building was equipment and machinery driven by water power. And then there were the workers, and they may have been coming at different times. But now we have a situation where we have the largest number of people ever coming to this building without seeing how the accommodation is going to work. The workers, when they came to this building historically, either came by foot or by train. Philmont was served by two train lines. Now we're reliant on the automobile. So that does absolutely mean parking. And I think I heard you say 90% of the parking could be handled on the site. Did I mishear that?
The opposite. 90% would be handled off-site.
Okay, good. Right, exactly. Right, okay. So that's the first elephant. And so we're already trying to get an agreement on a waiver, but without seeing how that gets resolved. That puts the planning board...
Sorry, that wasn't clear. The waivers have nothing to do with parking. We're not asking for a waiver. And my understanding is that's not what's addressed in this meeting. Is that right, Brandy? This is just acknowledging... You're acknowledging the elephant in the room. And the waivers are about noise, the loading dock, and the sunscreen.
And landscaping.
Okay, this is the planning board. So we deal with planning. And we have the responsibility of protecting the safety and welfare of Philmont residents, businesses, and visitors. This building would never get a permit if it was going for a permit today, because one of the main problems is it blocks the visual corridor to oncoming traffic. And now we have a concentration of cars, deliveries, and people right at the very spot where this conflict occurs, and the discussion is on waivers. The discussion isn't on how to solve the problems. And it really puts the planning board in a very difficult position. And I would like to see you start addressing the problems. So the second elephant is none of the plans that I received show how the loading and traffic pattern is going to work on this site. What we're seeing is a loading door, but it's not even level with the ground outside of it. I don't know what size trucks you're imagining, but we need to know how those trucks are going to turn around in a right-of-way and not the public road, because that public road, as I just said, is blocked visually from both directions. So if you've got loading trucks turning around on the public road, that's a big issue. So that's the second elephant. The third elephant is the noise. This is not the Basilica in Hudson that's got, you know, wide open spaces all around it. And I do disagree with you that the village residential component and the factory may have been predated it by just a few years, but the residences were built very close in time. So it's not like it got pumped down there were no residents here. Philmont has the highest concentration of residents of any village in this county. So again, this is not the Basilica. So the sensitive receptors are going to be very close by, and I would argue you're not going to get a fine because of the noise from the waterfall. The problem is the pitch at the lower the lower pitch range of event music. So you have a hip-hop car pull up alongside of you on the road, you're bouncing around, but it goes to the next light. This isn't on wheels, this is stationary. And you're looking to extend that noise problem to the hours beyond what the code says. And if that's the only leverage we have, then you need to start addressing how are you going to mitigate the noise. There's ways of doing that. There's many ways of doing it. But there's no you're asking for us or waivers without presenting how you're going to address these issues.
I may be getting confused here. There's two parts of this, and apologies if I'm not understanding this. There's the operating hours, which is when we're just legally allowed to have people using the space, and then there's the noise part of it. So completely understand, and that's why we started the conversation today, asking really more about the operating hours than for a waiver on the operating hours rather than the noise level. We're really asking more specifically of what we need to answer about the noise level, like what you just said, because I don't know how to analyze the difference between a low pitch sound coming from music that's at 50, that's per code versus the waterfall. So if we're at 35 dBs and someone complains and then they come out and they measure and say, this music's annoying, but the music, we shut the waterfall off, it's only at 35 dBs and then the waterfall's at 50. How do we make that discernment?
Okay, you need to get the appropriate consultant because the water shuts off on its own in August. So you're not going to have that comparison. The
falls, too.
Yes, true.
Not the high falls, the dam.
So both are audible from our property line as part of that.
I think we're getting well into the weeds here. So yeah. I think we're well into the weeds. Our goal today in coming back before the board, so we made an initial application in February. At that meeting, our goal was to make the application for site plan and special permit, submit a seeker form, and confirm the uses, because when the code was written, the uses, use certain words, and we wanted to make sure that the words we were using now in a present day were aligned, and you gave us that necessary feedback at that point in time. So what we've done with that is we've gone forward and we've done a little bit more design and submitted additional supplementary information for the application, showing some of the site improvements, utility improvements, the lighting, the landscaping, and we are trying to get a handle on what this board's concerns would be from a seeker standpoint, because you will be moving forward with the seeker review. And so, Mr. Pano, it's extremely helpful to hear that noise and having more information on noise as it relates to operating hours and as it relates to the ambient noise versus what's added from operations, that's helpful for us. So our goal tonight was to hear from this board what other issues are that we haven't already provided information on or that we need to provide more information on so that you can be informed to make a seeker determination. I think we were just trying to get ahead of some of the code things that are like non-starters. In terms of there's an existing loading dock, it's a historic building, we're trying to not alter the exterior configuration too much. So we're just trying to raise those issues tonight.
So right. So yeah. Once you get those waivers, we have no leverage. So, and the reason this gets into the weeds is because it's in your own report. It's in your own application. You're making a statement as if you're an acoustical engineer.
We're trying to identify.
So can I finish? That the sound from the water, either from the falls or from what goes over the dam, is going to mask the bass beats of an event music. And I can tell you that doesn't. So, I have some experience in doing noise metering work, so I think you're the one who brought it up. So that's why I'm bringing it up. I can only respond to what you brought up in the application.
I think just simply knowing that you're looking for additional information, we can provide supplemental information.
Okay, that's definitely needed. Okay. The parking issue and the noise issue and the loading dock issue.
Right. Just a couple things. So one is in the parking issue. Everyone in this room knows this project does not work without parking. So no one's asking you to make any final determinations without a solve for that problem. If there's only 80 spots for this building, clearly we can't ever have close to 460 people. No one's saying that as an issue. We're saying elephant in the room, first thing we brought up, parking's an issue. But also the hard thing for us, I think, is if you guys tell us this building needs to shut down at 7 o'clock and 8 o'clock at night, and that's it, game over, then we have to stop all the work we're doing, all the money we're spending, whatever's happening, and end this whole thing and figure out something else or sell the building. So part of it is, if you're asking us to spend a very significant amount of money and time and effort to solve the parking issue, we need some understanding of where you're coming from. And if you tell us like the hours are going to be 7, 8, and that's it, then we have to kind of end this, and we're not going to spend more money on parking and time and effort.
Or
so,
crucible studies.
Yeah, so part of it is just understanding kind of your temperature, what you're feeling, what you want to do with this building, if these uses and ideas acceptable, because, as you said, we're really invested a lot in this, and we need to kind of get some gauge of that. In terms of the turnaround, you're 100% right. So part of the way that we've been trying to solve that is as much of a turnaround as we can for a drop-off over here. We'll provide more detail to the planning board as well as it goes forward, so you can really see how that works. I know it's the planning board. So you've got to see how that works. We'll provide you more information about the drop-off and the steps we've taken to minimize the blockage in the road and pulling loose, and that is an issue. And then same thing, just, and I think we all understand the noise issue. It's if you're the waterfall and anything else happening in the building. So if you hold that gauge up and there's a person talking next to the building, anything could be considered over 40 decibels. So part of it's going to be understanding from the planning board, is it from neighbors' houses that we're going to measure it? And if that's the case, great, let's understand that and we'll put all the information together. Is there going to be, what happens in terms of gauging the waterfall? Again, we can say, can you just raise the decibel limit? But if you want to just measure it from a different area, we have solutions, but part of it is raising those questions. And again, if we need some kind of a temperature gauge here because of the time, effort, financial resources we're getting towards it. So again, no one's asking you guys to make any decisions on this today. It's two things. It's, can we start the secret process? And what are the questions, like Mr. Pino's asking, that we need to provide more information on? And you're not going to make any decisions without the leverage that you already have, and no one's asking you to.
So are you open to the idea that noise mitigation can occur with changes within the building?
Yeah, of course. So,
okay, so that none of that came up.
Oh, no, so absolutely. That is 100%. Most of our neighbors here tonight, we have heard their concerns about noise, and they're very vocal about it, and we understand that. And so we're trying to be as cautious as possible, and we think we have solves for it, but part of it is we need to understand from you, where are we taking those measurements, what they look like, how do you, like Alex said, how do you understand what waterfall noise is, what other noise is, understanding those measurements, and then exactly like you said, we can do more tests, we've done initial tests, we have some understanding of this, but we need kind of gauges to measure from. But 100%, we are extremely concerned about making this, look, this is it's a difficult process for everyone because no one's seen the building used in 50 years, right? So we're trying to understand those concerns, and absolutely the noise concern from our neighbors is the highest priority. So we don't mean to lessen that, and we're not trying to take away anyone's leverage.
Okay. Just understanding that it is a radical change in the use of the building.
Absolutely.
And that's going to present issues, concerns, just because of that radical change.
100%. And we're trying to be as understanding of that as possible. And it's difficult for everyone because it is such a big change in use.
I want to be clear, though. Redevelopment of a vacant building, revitalizing a vacant building, re-enlivening a vacant building is, in and of its nature, going to change the soundscape. And I think from everything we've read in the visionary plans that Philmont's been putting together, it's been a goal of the community for decades to see that building enlivened, and so we want to be respectful, and that's why we're here tonight. We want to hear what other issues we need to address proactively to help you guys be informed and be able to make a decision. So, you know, nobody wants to see a quiet, vacant building that's an attractive nuisance. We want to see it as part of the fabric of the community.
But And I'm in no way arguing to keep the building empty. Just want to be clear about that.
Just any use okay. except for like silent meditation in that space is going to make it a little less.
Yeah.
Well, Tom is correct. I mean, two big issues with this is noise and parking.
Yeah. I think what just the heart of this, maybe to put this into like 3 points, is we hear you loud and clear on noise analysis and parking, but we are hoping that those problem solves, the noise mitigation, let's say sticking within mm-hmm. this requirement, is does lead to a waiver on operating hours, because that is where this project runs into problems.
So that's where I was trying to lead you.
Yes.
Thank you for picking it up.
Okay. What you're really looking for, just changing the operating hours of the decibel limits, right?
Yeah, we were talking about the whole thing, but where it seems like this is leading is prove you're not going to be loud and obnoxious, and we will get better operating hours.
But part of that, again, with the noise, right, is just understanding how to measure. Given the constraints. And again, we have ideas that we'll, you know, give those to you, you know, in terms of measuring not from the party line, from people's houses, and those types of things. But that is a fundamental issue here. So
the acoustical test and analysis will add up and be a burden to us. We have to do it a couple of times because, you know, the data is like, oh, well, what if we do it this way and this way, and we're trying to get it done cleanly as we can the first time around.
It's pretty clear about sensitive receptors. I had to do this for a federal housing project, and you had to go to the windows. That's a sensitive receptor, a bedroom window.
The windows of the neighboring properties.
Yes.
Okay.
But that's just one way. Look at it. There are sensitive receptors, and just look at how that works.
So I have also done this a number of times for development projects, including some of you may be familiar with PS21 up in Chatham, which for a number of years had an open air venue and then also now has Black Box Theater. So, you know, we did all the noise analysis for that, so familiar with it. Typically, we start first with what your code says, right? And we try and figure out where the point of compliance is. Point of compliance is typically the property line where the mill is. So that's why we raised it as, like, we wanted to flag it right out of the gate, but obviously that's an issue because the building is on the property line. We would like, to Alex's point, we would like to get clarity as to where we should measure to. The next point we could measure to would be a neighbor's property line. So in several instances, that's across a street. Or we can measure at actual residences. So this is the kind of thing that helps us give you accurate information as efficiently as possible, because your code is silent on what an alternative measuring point would be. So if we can agree tonight that it, you know, needs to be the residence, then, you know, the actual location of the house, then we can figure out all those distances and we can do the sound projections and do the attenuation calculations to look at how the sound is attenuating. And then from there, we can start to understand what mitigations need to be proposed. But your guidance this evening on whether it's the property line of the abutting property or whether it's the house is a really important decision point.
Well, the regulation now says at the property line.
Correct.
I don't know if we have the power to change that, do we?
Well, yeah, I mean, as Brandy and I discussed earlier, it'd be a pitch to the village board probably to get that changed. But you've got to demonstrate that they're doing no harm by making that change, so they're going to need the data for you and the village board for that. So determining it would probably be best to have it from the property line, just the baseline, from the neighbor's property line, and then the residents, their residents. Because, you know, maybe they're in their house, the neighbors are in their house, and it doesn't bother them, but then they can't sit on their backyard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. I guess that's the, just part one fine point on that. The property line, if it's property line, we're taking a measurement from where our building is, that's tough. We're taking it from our property line, but like the closest point to a neighboring yard.
We'll do a graphic and it'll show all the radii out from the building.
Got it. Okay.
Are there any other environmental issues that...
Well, I have a question about... I've traveled Summit Street, and coming down Summit Street, crossing the bridge, getting to the mill is close.
Yeah.
It's very narrow there. Mm-hmm. How much traffic? That's back to the elephant again. How much traffic do you think you'll have? Because I looked at this little map here, and your entrance is kind of backwards. You know what I mean? It's not a 90-degree turn. It's 120 degrees. You have to actually turn back. How much in-and-out traffic are you going to have? Because that's a bad spot.
Mm-hmm. So I think we'd like to talk with the village about what their thoughts have been up until this point. From what I can see, there's guide rails that have been installed. There's warning signage. There's some reflectors, etc. If parking is off-site, then most people are walking to the building, which sort of establishes sort of like a historical type of access.
Yeah, well, that's either that or you're going to bus them in, something like that.
Correct.
But I'm thinking, you know, like how much trucking are you going to have there? And again, what size trucks? Because that's a congested area right there where you're, the exit is now for the mill.
So is this like a turning radius study?
It's
or?
A question of, how trucks can access that. And so I will just tell you, like, initially what our thought process is, because we're very limited in terms of what we can do. It's a shared right-of-way.
I know that, and you can't move the mill. Because the visibility coming down the hill is very poor right there at the corner of the mill.
Yeah, I'll be in touch with one of our transportation engineers about that, but we have seen warning systems that are in place, like when there's a vehicle that's, say, in our loading area in front of the building, that maybe there's a warning light that flashes on the south side of the building to, like, caution people that there's activity happening there. Because I've been down that road a number of times, too, and it's really blind. But we're expecting that in terms of, say, box trucks that need to access, they're going to have to pull towards the east corner of the building and then back into that driveway. Because you can't turn around. There's no opportunity to turn around at all. So we want to get loading off of Summit Street. We want to get it onto the driveway. And so that's why the circulation that we're showing there, we're trying to, like, figure out a way to keep the circulation on the north side of the building.
Even if it means changing your access.
Only insofar as sort of defining that gravel space that's in front of the building now in a way that facilitates the circulation. Yeah.
I just wanted to make you aware of that.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I'm 100% with you. Yeah, I'm curious, though, if there have been any plans or proposals, because that condition has existed, you know, obviously.
It's been there for a long time.
Forever, right? Mm-hmm. But if there have ever been any other proposals that have come up with the village to mitigate that or...
Well, no, because it's just, there's no commercial traffic to speak of. But we do get tractor trailers going up that hill.
Going over to the plant?
Yeah, and they're not supposed to.
I'm curious about that. Okay, it's good to know.
But it hasn't happened before because we haven't had 400 people arriving at the building at one time in its entire history.
No, but
so, you know, and I know you're saying it's only going to happen twice a year, but there's certainly going to be a lot more pedestrian activity to this building on every day, even regardless of the extremes. So, and already people wander to look at the dam and they wander on the road. There's only a sidewalk on one side, but often they're on the other side without the sidewalk. How are you going to keep them out of there?
Yeah, and is this just a matter of just showing the information? Because, I mean, we know that there's trucks and people coming, and we know that parking's off-site. So I guess, once again, are we saying there is just going to be a diagram of a turning radius that shows the different conditions?
What we can do with the programming is use published data for similar programmed uses to estimate the type and number of trips and the frequency of deliveries. You know, this is in a warehouse, so we're not going to be having, you know, large trucks go in and out every day. But if there's a restaurant function, you know, the Cisco or the Ginsburg truck comes around, you know, once a week or every 4 days or whatever to make deliveries. So we'll quantify that and then provide for that.
I can't see one of those Ginsburg trucks going in there.
They do have several different size trucks. So
but
I think
they
one
have
of their
to make them smaller,
ones.
Yeah.
Not one of their
That's what my concern is, because they're going around there and they're coming around the blind corner. They're right there.
Yeah. My personal feeling, sir, is that I would prefer to not see any trucks continue south on Summit. I prefer to see them, you know, do their loading and unloading and then come back out down to Main Street. I just don't think we want to send more trucks up to the county route.
No, I don't think they should be going up that or coming down that way.
Yep.
Okay, that's really helpful. Thank you. We'll get that.
And just one last comment. I just want to be sure you know that the Village of Philmont has adopted the New York State Energy Stretch Code. So regardless of the solar panels and micro hydro, there are certain things you'll need to do to the envelope of the building. Yeah, historic buildings are not automatically exempt from the stretch code.
I'm not the architect, so I can't respond to that one.
Okay.
In the code.
Yep, okay. Sounds good. Thank you for sharing that. So I was curious, though, just in terms of SEAKER, if this board sort of recognizing that you guys are the primary ones that are going to review this application, if you would be comfortable declaring your intent to be lead agent tonight. And I think in other times when I've been before this board, we've helped you with the lead agency circulation, but I believe, Rob, this is an unlisted action requiring a coordinated review because we will have funding agencies and other departments and agencies that will need to give approvals for this project. But we would be happy to facilitate that if the board was comfortable moving forward with just that motion tonight to declare their intent.
Are you comfortable with that? That they're offering to do the legwork and you are the lead agency technically, so we're declaring your intent to name yourself the lead agency.
Okay.
Yeah, I have one question on that. Is sometimes in cases like this, there is money made available to help review from the community point of view, to review these documents, because they can get very technical and it's difficult for people to understand it. So would there be any money to hire a consultant to do that?
Yeah, we can talk about escrow for your purposes, if should you need it.
Okay.
I mean, initially I was going to recommend that the village's engineer at CPL undertake a review. We're almost there. I mean, they're giving you more detail as it comes in. Obviously, he would handle the water sewer connections and designs and things like that. But if you get an audiology study and his firm is not qualified to do that, obviously you can select someone else to give you guidance on that. I have no idea what to set an escrow ask at this point. It's probably a little premature to do that, but we can when we get there. So if you're comfortable with that, you would make a motion to start the secret process with your intent to declare yourself as lead agent.
I need a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Oh.
Tom, you want a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And we'll coordinate with the applicant's engineering firm to make the required circulations on
yes,
that.
Yes, absolutely. We'll go ahead and do that. So we'll do certified mailings, and if I can confirm the list of agencies, I have a list, but I'll send that over to you, Rob.
Yep. Jessica's very happy. You're not doing a lot of certified mailings for them, though. They'll do it for us.
Yeah, right. Unless you really want to do that.
No, I'm not fighting on that one.
All right, so now when do you guys want to come back?
July?
July meeting, yeah.
Yeah,
there's not 30 days between now and the next meeting, and that'll give us time to respond to some of the questions that have been raised this evening, so thank you very much.
All right, so did you accomplish what you wanted to accomplish?
I think so.
As long as you have let us know, you know, what the concerns are, so, you know, I think we've heard noise and parking and traffic circulation. If there's anything else, let us know.
Anybody think of anything else?
Not right now.
No.
Maybe next time.
Thank you very much.
All right, look, I know some of you wanted to ask questions, but this is not a public hearing. You'll get your chance in 30 days, in 60 days.
Well, we are here for questions.
Also, if we don't have anyone's email, and you want to come up and do it to us, we'll add you to our mailing list as well.
Actually, just reminded me, you will not get a shot at him in 60 days. Because it will not be a public hearing.
For you guys, at least.
But that day will come.
That's what I want to know, Bob.
We will let you know.
Do I get to say my piece?
We will let you know, Dale.
Because a lot of things got said.
A lot of things.
Okay.
All right, I need a motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
I'll second it.
We got a motion in a second. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 I just want to meet you guys.
Someone technically in my office.
Yeah, I'm good. Nice to meet you. You're wrong.